Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here with you. We are recording on Sunday, April 27th, bright and early in the morning. You'll hear this on Monday about midday. And we're on a tight time schedule, so we're going to sort of dive right in. We're going to cut the chit-chat. There's going to be no banter today. Just going to hit it hard. And we're going to start off with our jersey number, because this is episode 165, and so we got to talk jersey number 65. And man, we're really in the doldrums of the jersey numbers. But Big Maple, James Paxton, 10 years.
Hell yeah.
13.8 F-war. Doesn't seem like a whole lot, except there are only three players in the history of the game to have worn this jersey number and accumulate more than that. Or R-war, not F-war, R-war. They are Yoan Moncada, Framber Valdez, and Cliff Lee. They wore it for four seasons combined between them. I guess I could, you know, give a shout out to Lee, who wore it for two seasons at least. But Paxton, 10 years wearing the jersey number. Obviously, lots of injury issues for that guy. I went to one of his very, very, very first games. So he debuted with the Mariners in 2013, he debuted with the Mariners. And I went to one of his first games with a good friend of mine who is a Dodgers fan. And he, like, midway through the start was like, man, I get Clayton Kershaw vibes from this guy. Like, his, the way he pitches, big lefty, right? Like, and I just, like, both of us just sort of fell in love with this guy as a pitcher real early in his career. And man, it is a shame he didn't stay healthy, because he was so good when he was at his best.
Yeah, I'm good with Paxton. Very short stint with the Red Sox that did involve, you know, a lack of consistent production and obviously a lack of health, but he did still show signs even then when he was like kind of washed and very injured of like, oh, there's something here. If you remember, there was a stretch during his Red Sox tenure where he was getting picked up pretty heavily. So yeah, I like the Paxton pick. That's a good one.
He's one of those years with the Red Sox, which were a good, you know, decade into his career, were not just like, oh wow, he's still got something, but this sense of like, man, if he had stayed healthy, he might have aged really well too, right? He might have been one of these guys with like a 15-year career, because he didn't need his best stuff. Like, even a decade in, his stuff was starting to fade a little bit. He still got guys out. He was still really good.
Yeah.
Just a shame. But hey, at least he got the 165th episode of the Keeper Cup podcast, which is probably all he wanted in his career, right?
Yeah, probably.
All right, let's talk head-to-head heroes. I thought for sure I knew who I was going to pick, and then I had to back off and switch things up. But Pete, who did you get? I'll let you go first on this one.
Yeah, so I was a little torn between a few names, because I'm not going to pick him because it's not fun to talk about. It could be fun to talk about. Jordan Beck, just a ridiculous week.
Yeah.
Eugenio Suarez wasn't a ridiculous week. It was just a good game. And then I wanted to go with Pete Crow Armstrong again, just to keep the streak going, because he was another, just he's seven another for his last week, 20. Yeah. Like, he's just been on fire. But I want to go with Noel V. Marte, who is kind of bailing me out. Now, a lot of this production has come, not a lot, but some of this production has come at Coors. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. That's bad pitching and a good place to hit. But even before going to Coors, they've been on a long road trip, have the Reds. He had a 5-for-7 game against Baltimore with a homer and 7 RBI in that one. Now, one of those, I think the homer itself was off of a hitter pitching, or a position player pitching, but like he's been really, really good. When he's hit the ball, when he's gotten hits, the hits have been hit really hard. The average exit velocity is not quite as high as you'd kind of hope to see if he was truly breaking out. But two things that stick out to me, Chad. The strikeout rate is at 11.9%. Now, like, the sample is super small, and obviously if he's hitting well, the strikeout rate's going to look low. So, like, that's not something that I expect to see going forward, but it's progress. And he has the eighth highest max exit velocity so far this season. Now, ninth is Jordan Walker, so maybe that's another thing you should take with a grain of salt. But if you put the minimum batted ball events to one, so this is every batted ball event in baseball, the eighth highest max exit velocity is Noel V. Marte, and it's the hardest one of his career at 116.7. So he's had a great week. I'm hoping he keeps it going, and I don't see why he can't get consistent play time in that Reds lineup. This is exactly why I was worried about Spencer Steer. It's why I didn't really care about Christian Encarnacion Strand. There's a lot of players, and whoever's going to hit is, I think, going to play. And Oelvi Marte is hitting.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing is, like you talked about, the exit velocity has not been great. The hard hit rate hasn't been great. But he, the strikeout rate, the contact rate is up. His swing strike rate is way down. Those are good signs. And the other thing that's sort of fascinating here is one of the stats that sort of, you know, we talk about occasionally, but it bounces around. It's a fickle number. I like to think of it as is line drive rate, right? It's not a thing that's super sticky. His line drive rate right now is 11.8%. That's super low. That is going to regress positively. Like, that is going to go up. And when it goes up, line drives are good, right? So he's actually having some bad batted ball luck, despite the fact that, like, his BABIP is pretty good. It's 323. His ex-WOBA is lower than his WOBA. And so you would think, like, oh, that means he's having, you know, good batted ball luck, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure that's really true. Like, there's some of that. But that line drive rate's going to improve. When that line drive rate improves, it should help correct. Like, line drives have high ex-WOBAs. Line drives have high BABIPs. Like, those numbers, it'll help counteract what might be some good luck and balance out a bit. So yeah, I love that pick. I've been trying to pick him up in a couple of places. We're gonna talk about Steer among others later in the episode. We're gonna talk about some of our teams that are failing miserably and why. And Steer's part of that reason for me. And for some of those teams, I'm hoping Marte is part of the solution. He's a really good guy, I think, to pick up in leagues where your teams are struggling right now, because I think he can help. And if your team continues to struggle, you're picking up a 23-year-old infielder. Like, I think the other thing with Marte that I think is worth noting is, you know, he's been up and down. It's been 3 years, and it's feel like he seems like he should be like a 26-year-old who's like a post-hype late. And he is post-hype. For sure he's post-hype. But this isn't a late breakout. He's 23, and he's 23 the whole season. He does not turn 24 until after the season.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. So, like, you know, I guess what I would say is this is, like, I know people are still going to be a little bit skeptical and a little bit, we've seen some bad performances from him. But if he were 23 and getting his first call up and performing like this, he would have been like a elite prospect breaking out, and people would be all over it. He's still that age. That age is still like that's still real. So yeah, I love that pick. I love that pick. When you started to kick this off, you mentioned Jordan Beck. You mentioned Eugenio Suarez. I was sure Suarez was going to be my pick before I looked at the numbers. I was like, four home run game. How could that not be the pick?
It's He's like also all had a hits.
Four home run week. That's it. Like, yeah. And it doesn't change the fact that, like, that's four home runs, 8 runs, 5 RBIs in the last 7 days, 444 average. But yeah, that's it. It was just that one game. And so I ended up deciding that was kind of boring. And
I bet a lot of people benched him too. So
yeah,
like, he's been so bad. Imagine having a four homer game on your bench. Oh my God.
Well, I had none of my rosters, so that's how I played it. But a guy who's been on my rosters all year since the offseason, who I've been really counting on and has been just wonderful for me. And so I want to give him a shout because he had a great week. Zach Neto, 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases, 333 average over the last week. He's still an angel. And so those 3 home runs and 3 stolen bases came to 4 runs and 4 RBI. You'd like to see a little more than that, but luckily I have him in a lot of auto new leagues where those points leagues, those runs and RBIs don't matter to me very much. So the fact that lineup isn't good, it's not all sort of, you know, rainbows and sunshine, puppy dog tails for Neto. He has yet to walk, and it's only 31 plate appearances, right? He's just barely been back, but he's yet to walk. He's striking out 25.8% of the time. It's a little high. He's been to 23% for his career, so it's not like some crazy number. That line drive rate that I was just talking about with Marte, like, that number regresses. He's at 27%. That number is going to come down. He is not going to maintain a 37.5% home run per fly ball rate. Like, you know, enjoy the hot streak. It's going to settle back in, but he's crushing the ball. He's a 96 average EV, 45.5% hard hit rate, 18.2% barrel rate, 458 xwoba. Like, he looks great. And yes, those numbers are going to come back down, but you know, he's at a 424 woba right now. Like, there's a lot of room for that number to come back down and still be valuable. He went for if you look at it from a 5x5 standpoint, he went 23-30 last year in 155 games. He's obviously not going to get 255 games this year. He's only played 8 so far. I think he can still push 20-30. He might even be able to go like 25-30. So I'm all in on Neto. I'm thrilled to see him back because, like I said, he's been on a bunch of my teams. Just I've been just staring at him on the bench going, man, he would really help. And now he is.
Yeah, no, I really like that pick. You know, you and I think had multiple conversations in the offseason talking about this, like this blob of shortstops. If we revisited that conversation, I was definitely lower on Neto than you were. Maybe it's a little bit of confirmation bias just because in this very small sample of cold April where hitters seem to be quite behind right now, it does seem like Neto is rising above the crop. And when I say those names, or when I say we were talking about this blob of shortstops, it was names like Anthony Volpe, Bo Bichette, I know, is a part of that conversation. Ezekiel Tovar, who really wasn't doing anything before his injury. And I don't know. I mean, if we were redrafting right now and I knew that Neto, you know, had only missed like 3 weeks to start the season, I think I'm a little bit more than 3 weeks. I think I'm taking Neto over those guys.
Yeah. I mean, it really is like he's, you know, he's played 8 games now. It was just 3 weeks. Like, he's been back since the 18th or 19th. And there was a bunch of concern about, like, you know, it was a shoulder injury, right? So like, how's he going to, like, shoulder looks fine. Like, it's not looking bad. So, right. And that's the other thing with the hot start is, like, even if you're like, look, that home run per fly ball rate can't continue, but like the concern coming off a shoulder injury is like, can he still put a, you know, charge in the ball, right? Is he going to swing for that kind of power? And the answer is yes. Like, the shoulder's not going to be a problem. Like, I think that's the one thing he's definitively answered for us is like, you don't have to worry about that. And that's huge. That's a huge thing to have off your plate. So yeah. Let's dive into some of these struggling teams, and we're going to go right off the bat. So what we're going to try to do today, let me talk a little bit more about what we're going to try to do today. We're getting to the end of April. Like I said, this is coming out on the 28th. We're almost at May 1st. May 1st is a pretty good cutoff for the point at which it's worth looking at your team's realistic chances and being honest with yourself about whether your team's going to compete this year. Anything earlier that, like, you're in mid-April and you're like, my team sucks, I'm going to sell. Like, mid-April, your team could go from like last to first in a week. But we're now at a point where, like, if it was mid-April and you're like, my team sucks, I'm going to sell. Well, I don't know. Maybe it'll be in first place next week. If it isn't yet, like, if you haven't started to see that improvement, you should be worried. I've got some teams like that, and I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with those teams. We're going to try to talk about some players on those teams as well as how those teams are performing. And I think, Pete, I'm going to start with Auto New League One. And this is a 4x4 league. What I'm going to talk about here, I think, is pretty relevant for any roto league in terms of how I think about whether my team's going to improve or not. As part of talking about this, though, we're going to try to talk about the players who are driving the underperformance and how we feel about, like, is this guy going to turn it around? Is this guy going to be good, and is it going to be enough to help? This team, Pete, is in last place and not particularly close. So, you know, 4x4, 8 categories, getting 26 total points from my 8 categories. The next worst team, the 11th place team, is at 36 points. I obviously have a long way to go to get anywhere near contending. And what's killing me in this league is really two things. My offense has been okay. I'm, you know, sort of middle of the pack in home runs. I'm sort of middle of the pack and on base, a little below middle of the pack in slugging and runs. But I've got some guys on this team that are underperforming that I'm not worried about, like, at all. The, you know, 356 OBP, 378 slugging that I'm getting from Juan Soto is not something I'm concerned about. It sucks. Like, I'm not happy about it, but I'm pretty confident Juan Soto will be good. I don't know if that's a hot take, but
it's getting pretty spicy here on Keeper Cut. But all right, you know what? I'll buy in on that too. If you're going to give me that action, I'll say Juan Soto improves.
Yeah, I think he will. And I've like, you know, I took a bet on Bo Bichette and it's been okay. But I definitely need to make some improvements at shortstop. And I have gone out. I picked up Thomas Segese. I picked up Geraldo Perdomo.
Nice.
I probably need to do more. I could really like Ezekiel Tovar's in the IL. I could use him back, although he wasn't really helping me when he was playing. I got a couple guys in the minors, Matt Shaw, Carson Williams. Like, there's some guys, there's some possible help coming. But I feel like my offense could be pretty good. I've got, like, you look at the rest of that offense, I've got Logan Ohapi, a catcher. I've got Manzardo and Goldschmidt are my 1B and util right now, although I also have Vinny Pascantino, who is probably worth discussing because, man, that hasn't been fun. Itak Paredes at third base, who I think is going to be fine. The numbers are a little, like, the slugging in particular is a little down, but I'm not super worried about that. My outfield, like, I've got Soto, I've got Tatis, I've got Wyatt Langford, who's been awesome. I've got Ryan O'Hearn, who he's a platoon bat, but has been great. I've got some guys struggling as well. I could really use Josh Lowe and Parker Meadows back. Although I think Lowe is going to be on rehab soon. I think he's not that far away, week or two. But what's really killing me in this team is my pitching. I am dead last in ERA and WHIP. I am in 11th of 12 in home run per nine. I am 10th of 12 in strikeouts, although I've thrown fewer innings than most teams, so that strikeout number should improve. But like ERA, the 11th place team in ERA is at 3.94. I'm at 4.41. I've used up 222 innings, which is about a seventh of my innings, about a sixth of my innings. It's a little less than a sixth, between a sixth and seventh of my innings. So I really have to like look at this and say, like, okay, if I'm going to compete at all, I probably need to be at least middle of the pack in my pitching rates. And that means bringing my ERA down from 4.4 to like 3.4. And that means I need like a 3.1, 3.20, something like that, the rest of the way. And so I want to talk about some of the pitchers on my team because I sort of thought this pitching would be okay. I made a big trade for Michael King in the offseason. He's been great. I made a little bit of a bet on Luis Castillo just being a solid arm. I wasn't expecting him to be an ace, and he hasn't been, but he's been solid. He's, 3.62 ERA. What?
He was good last night.
Yeah, he's going to I get it. Castillo's not an ace anymore, but he's solid. I have Tyler McGill all over my rosters, and that's obviously been wonderful. Sandy Alcantara's been terrible. Gavin Williams hasn't really been what I hoped. And then I've got Jared Jones and Spencer Arrighetti on the IL. I had some other guys. Who did I cut? Because I made some cuts of guys that I thought would really help. I cut Kumar Rocker now that he's hurt. But then I also, what's really hurt me here is like, I had Ryan Walker, who I thought was going to be a rock in my bullpen, and I ended up cutting him. Calvin Fauché, Bo Brisky actually cut before the season really even started. Edwin Uceda, I expected big things out of in the bullpen. He's done nothing useful for me. Mason Montgomery, who I thought was going to be a bullpen ace, has been quite bad. I've gotten really hurt in the bullpen. I've tried to turn over my bullpen. My bullpen at this point, like, I picked up Justin Sterner with the A's, who's been excellent. I have Garrett Whitlock, who's been excellent in throwing a lot of innings. Yuki Matsui is striking out everybody, although he's only got a home run problem, which is a challenge for me in this league. Justin Slayton, sort of the other end of the spectrum. The ERA doesn't really follow from everything he's done, but has yet to give up a home run, which is quite nice. But like, I just cannot get this pitching right. And I guess the question for you is like, if I need to have a top three-ish in this league pitching staff the rest of the way, let's assume I can keep churning through relievers and eventually get my bullpen in decent shape. Can I count on Sandy Alcantara to get right? Can I count on Jared Jones to come back and help? Can I count on Spencer Arrighetti to be good? Is Gavin Williams going to continue to improve? Or is there just like, I mean, my whole rotation in this league, I've mentioned a bunch of these names already, but in addition to King, Castillo, and McGill, with Jones and Alcantara, Williams, Arrighetti, I also have Griffin Canning. I have Joe Boyle and Zebby Matthews, both like just dominating AAA. I've got Cade Povich, Bowden Francis, who hasn't been bad, but is giving up too many home runs. Like, am I like, should I be going out and trying to trade some of my minor leaguers for an ace to extend that rotation, strengthen it, and try to make a run at this? Or is that pitching just, it's just not going to happen?
What makes it so hard is that it's not only underperformers, but injuries. And
yeah,
like Jared Jones, I don't think you can factor in Jared Jones. I think you have to view that as like, I might get a good pitcher at some point from Jared Jones. But like, I don't think at this point you really factor that into your decision. I think it's promising that Arrighetti missed surgery, which is good, but he does kind of have a homer problem himself, if I'm remembering correctly, and this is 4x4. So like, I like Arrighetti. Obviously, I have him on like every freaking team this year, but I'm not sold that he's going to be your savior. In Alcantara's case, like, I do expect him to improve. I think he's a great player to have in 4x4 because he has the dominant ground ball rate, which is going to keep the home runs down. It doesn't matter that he doesn't get wins in 4x4, I believe, right? What am I missing there? Right, yes.
No, you're right.
And I kind of expect the strike guy. He's never been a big strikeout pitcher, but he will be a volume guy, which will help. And I do think they're going to pick up a little bit more as he gets a little bit more comfortable as the season goes on. So Alcantara, sure, you can expect something from. Looking at this from like a strategy point of view, though, you know, you asked about trading some minor leaguers for an ace. I would consider at this point, especially because it's like it's ratio based right now, like you're having a big problem with your ratios. I think you're going to get strikeouts. I think you can be competitive in strikeouts with what you have. Investing in some elite bullpen pieces, like getting maybe even three just like dominant relievers, which I know is a weird strategy in 4x4 because it doesn't count saves. But like the one, my 4x4 team is a disgrace right now in the Keeper Cut Listener League. But like Luke Weaver, Robert Suarez, and Hunter Gaddis have single-handedly saved me from like being the worst team in the history of Otnew. So I would consider like investing in, because I don't think it would cost as much. So like you can attempt to still compete this year without completely mortgaging your future after this disastrous start.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about Alcantara, because I tend to agree things will get better. And some of this is like, you know, his underlying numbers, FIPX, FIP Sierra, like they're all like mid fours ERA ish, as opposed to the 6.56 he's put up. Like some of this
crazy
regression is going to come for him in a positive way. He's never been a big strikeout guy, but his strikeout rate, you know, when he was good, was in the 22 to 24% range. It's at 17% this year. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, his career walk rate is 7.5%. He was even lower than that in some of his better years. He's at 12% this year. There's a lot of walks. Is this just a case of command control? Like those are the last things to come back, right? Like velocity comes back as your arm strengthens, and we're seeing that. Like he's, you know, he's a little down from his 98-98-1 peak, but he's throwing 97-4. Like it's not, you know, you worry about that half mile per hour drop when a guy goes from like 93 to 92.5, because you're going from like not great to borderline. At 98 to 97.4, I'm not screaming about that. Is the command, is it just like you've got to be patient and wait for that command to come back, or does he have a walk problem? Because if he has a walk problem, like if you don't strike guys out and you have a walk problem, things get ugly real fast.
It would just be so weird for that to be the case. Like this is not a guy with a short track record. This is a dude who pitched like more innings than anybody before his Tommy John surgery. And it just hasn't been a problem for him since like forever, really since 2018, during his time as a really good fantasy option eventually to a Cy Young fantasy option. Walks have been like, that's a strength for Sandy Alcantara. So like when I look at the full body of work and I consider he's coming off Tommy John surgery, he's 29 years old. Like that is something that I would expect to improve. I don't expect that to be an issue for him. And when you really break down his struggles this season, it's walks. Like you said, he's had 2-4 walk games against subpar opponents, the Nationals and the Pirates. Like that's weird. That's not something I'm going to expect going forward. And then the one real like tough to recover from start was his second start of the season against the Phillies. And the Phillies are really freaking good. So I'm not ready to press the panic button. I actually think, honestly, which is weird to say for a 29-year-old with strikeout and walk issues coming off Tommy John surgery who plays for the Marlins, I actually think it's a pretty good buy low opportunity for Sandy Alcantara right now.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's some other stuff to look at with him that I think is pretty good. If you look at his pitch mix, he's always been sort of four-seamer, sinker. He's got a slider and a change he uses a lot. He's mixed in a curveball 10% of the time this year, which is kind of new. It was never over, well, I guess in some of his early years, it was like, you know, 9%, 8%, 9%, but it was down to like 2% or less for a while. But he uses all of those pitches. And if you go look at his stuff plus numbers, they're all good. The fastball, the four-seamer is 108. The sinker is 113. That 108 is way up from where he was, even in his sort of best years. The 113 is down a little bit, but that's still obviously really good. The slider's at 113. The curve's at 119. The change is at 101. Change is a little down from what you'd hope from him, but like everything else, like the stuff plus looks good, and his overall stuff plus is 109. It's 110 for his career. So when we talked about, like, you know, I'm not super worried about that small drop in velocity, like the pitch shape, the way, like all that stuff looks good. It's the location, right? His location plus is 93. It's 104 for his career, right? He's been 104, 105, 103, 105 in, you know, 2020 through 2023. And now it's 93. So it is like, I know this is sound like an oversimplification. It's as simple as just hitting his spots. If he hits his spots, he's going to be good again. Now, you know, There's a tell-em-wash thing here, right? Nice. Just hit your spots. That's easy, right?
Throw strikes.
It's not. I get that. But like you said, this is a guy who, like, that was his bread and butter, right? Was like he just used his stuff so well that even though he didn't have the big whiff stuff, even though he didn't have the big strikeout stuff, it played up. And so I think I'm with you. I didn't really, like, I had thought of him as like, I'm just gonna ride this out. It's gonna come back. But I think you might be right that he may be a guy worth poking around at other teams and seeing, like, man, if there's a manager who's frustrated, and maybe it is the time to buy low. I just think it's worth remembering that, like, the upside on Alcantara, while we have seen that sort of Cy Young capability, the upside now is probably more like low to mid threes ERA without a lot of strikeouts. Because, well, you said, yes, he has been a volume guy. Like, the innings are down right now. It's going to take a little while for it to build up. They have talked about keeping his innings down because they want to be able to trade him at some point. He's not going to push the, you know, 2021 through 2023. In 2023, you know, he gets hurt, he misses a few starts, but 2021 through 2023, 205.2, 228.2, 184.2 innings. I think maybe 170 is a more reasonable cap for this year. And that's assuming things go well and there isn't a, you know, he's still like, there's still a possibility of like an IL stint, not so much because he like re-injures himself, but because like he's working a lot, right? And I do think they want to keep his inning count down at the beginning of the season so they can trade him in July or August or June or July if they need to. And like, it wouldn't be totally crazy for them to decide he needs a, you know, his arm is just sore and he needs an IL stint in late May or something like that, just to keep him fresh. So I think you just have to temper expectations on the high end. And that does, for this particular team where I need really low ERA innings, it's a little like, is he going to do enough? But I think you're right. I think he's, you know, hold here, maybe a buy low in other places. So
can I just point out one stat for his career? I'll be quick. April, May, June, July, August, September. If you look at them month by month for his entire career, his walk rate in April and May is around 9.3%. By the time we get to, and those are his two worst months by far, by the time we get to September, his walk rate for his career is 6.4%. So, like, it's a lot worse than 9.3 right now. We would take that. He's also coming off Tommy John surgery. So he is a guy who tends to improve with the command as the season goes on.
Good note. Good note. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Pete, we'll turn our attention to one of your teams. It'll be your turn to vent. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. I had my turn to complain about a team that's underperforming. We talked a little bit about Sandy Alcantara and what we could expect from him the rest of the way. Pete, you commented on your listener league team being just a disaster. Do you want to talk about that one? You have another one you'd rather talk about?
Yeah, no, this, my teams are doing like okay this year. Like I've hit hard on some of the guys I was all in on, and then I've whiffed completely. So like Luis Robert and Spencer Arrighetti are examples of me just like completely whiffing. Brandon Lau. But then, you know, I've hit on quite a few guys that have like kind of just kept me in the middle in a lot of leagues. But this team sticks out as like one of my biggest disasters so far this season. It's for a lot of different reasons. I thought I overcorrected. Like I traded for Logan Webb before the season, and he's been absolutely unbelievable. Still the worst pitcher in baseball. So this is really like a crazy, crazy situation. But I thought like, okay, I got Logan Webb. Like I'm just good on homers now. Like it's not going to be a problem. But homers have been a problem for me. Tanner Bibee has been like one of the biggest disasters. I had Bowden Francis, who I still like, kind of like, but he just doesn't work in this format. So I just had to straight up cut him. So homers sure. have been a problem for me. I also had the Porter Hodge disaster, 6 earned run performance out of the bullpen. I also had on this team the Jordan Romano, 6 earned run performance out of the bullpen, who I have since cut. So like there are some extremes to this team that kind of explain where it's at. On the offensive side, I'm not going to waste time talking about Jordan Alvarez. Like he's going to be a stud. Just be patient. Please, God, don't consider like selling low on a player like Jordan Alvarez. He's going to be fine.
Same conversation we just had about Juan Soto on my team, exactly. Right? It's like, yeah, he's not giving you what you want. Just be patient.
Right. Exactly. It's and I kind of view like Vlad only has 2 homers so far. Like I view that the same way. Like that's the same number as Jordan Alvarez. Like Vlad's otherwise been very fine. but only 2 homers. That's weird. Salvador Perez, only 2 homers. So, like you can begin to see why this team is performing so poorly. But the one thing that sticks out, and we talked about this acquisition before the season, was me spending $37. I got into an absolute bidding war from Marcus Semien. And he has just been a train wreck this season. And I got him in a few spots, and I think it's easy to be like, ha, idiot, why did you get an aging player who clearly showed signs of decline last year? Well, that's partially because this guy who showed signs of decline last season still managed to put forward in a season where, like, when you think about Marcus Semien's 2024, you think like bust, like terrible. He hit .237. He still had 23 homers, 74 RBI, and 101 runs. Those two of those categories, runs and home runs, that's 2 of the 4 for this format. So, and right. I'm willing to bet his slugging was also among the best among second basemen. So I thought like this is a pretty safe floor, but he has just been a disaster. And although I don't also have Brandon Lau on this team, and he's not as worth bringing up because his ADP was not nearly what Marcus Semien's was, his, you know, average salary was not nearly what Marcus Semien's was, those have been 2 players who like I felt pretty good about at second base or at middle infield in a lot of my drafts that have just completely tanked some of my roster. So Brandon Lau I've cut in most places. Marcus Semien, I'm benching, man. Like I got Dylan Moore, who apparently is the reincarnation of Honus Wagner this season. And I'm playing a $1 Dylan Moore consistently over a $37 Marcus Semien just because I can't bring myself to cut him yet. I'm hoping that there's hope.
I had a $23 Semien on that team we just talked about, my original League One team, and I cut him. Yeah. And that was partially because I more and more reached a point with that team where I was like, I've got to focus on guys who can help me long term. Mm-hmm. And he obviously, like, I was, there's no, like, I guess it's possible he could do something to make me want to keep him at 25 next year the rest of the way, but it certainly doesn't seem likely, even if he produces some value. If I look at Simeon, there's some things that are not concerning, some things that are concerning. The strikeout rate is 19.6%. It doesn't seem like a big deal, right? Like, that's not a bad strikeout rate. But really, like, he's been around 14, 15, 16% in his time with Texas. And even last year, as bad as last year was, it was 14.6. So that is a pretty big increase. And it comes with the first, what would be a career high swinging strike rate, other than he had 70 plate appearances as his debut season. Let's not count that. But other than that, it'd be a career high in swing strike rate. He's getting more pitches in the zone than he has in the past. And this is something I hadn't really looked at historically, other than just see like, oh, our pitcher's challenging him. Like, what's going on here? But Eno Saris talked about this on Rates and Barrels in the offseason, that an increase in zone percentage is often a reflection of other teams and other pitchers being like, yeah, you don't got it anymore. Right. And he said, especially with older players, when you see their zone percentage creeping up, it's an early indication that other teams, when they look at their advanced scouting, when the pitchers are facing them, are going, all right, I'm going to throw it in the zone. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And that is a little concerning there. Now, under the hood, I mean, his exit velocity is up a little bit. His barrel rate is up, but his hard hit rate is down, which not great. I came to the conclusion that he was a cut, and that is, I think, if I were giving you advice on this team, I just don't know that I would continue to hold out hope. The other thing that sort of stands out with Simeon for me, because one of the first things I looked at was, is his bat speed slipping, right? Because that's, you know, older player, not getting for as much power. Like, maybe that's what it is. And it's not. Like, his average bat speed, you know, keep in mind, from a bat speed perspective, we only have data going back to like, what, halfway through 2023 or something like that, right? So this is relatively limited. His bat speed is actually up. His fast swing rate is actually up. They're both really bad. And what I can't tell, because we don't have historical data going back further than this, was the bad bat speed in 2023 an early indication of the struggles in 2024? And the bad bat speed in 2024 was, hey, look, he's lost it. And now we're seeing a continuation of that. Or has he just never been a high bat speed guy, and that's not where his game has come from? And I think that's one of those, like, we don't know enough about bat speed to know what to make of some of this data. But it doesn't look good. On top of that, his squared up rate is down, and so he's not making as good of contact even when he does get the bat speed up. I just see enough concerns here where, like, my overall read is, like, he doesn't have great bat speed. Opposing pitchers aren't scared of him. He's swinging and missing more than he has at any other point in his career. And it was just too much for me. And I was just decided I needed the cap space more than I needed him. I think that'd be the one other thing, actually, as I look at your team, you have $10 of cap space, and you have a couple open roster spots. It's like, maybe it's not pressing for you today, but, you know, if you pick up two $4 guys with those two open roster spots, and all of a sudden you're at a full roster and $2 of cap space, man, I think Simeon might be next on the list, because that $18, $19 of cap plus, like, there's the other thing with Simeon in that case for you is there's two possibilities. If you caught him, like, let's say you caught him this week, possibility one is he starts to turn it around. He starts to play better, and somebody in the league is like, oh man, maybe this is a bounce back. I'm going to take a shot at him, but they'd have to take a shot at him for $20, right? And his minimum bid will be 19. Which means they're going to make cuts, and you're going to all of a sudden have an extra $18, $19 of cap space open up, and there will be somebody making extensive cuts to make room for him, and you'll have a chance to bid on them, which is all good for you. Or you're going to be waiting around till the end of May to start an auction on a $19 Simeon so you can cut him again and get another $9 in cap space. And in either one of those cases, the earlier you cut him, the sooner that comes together for you in a positive way. Because, like, I don't know, like, let's look at this league. There is one team, it is worth noting, in this league. There are a couple teams, actually, with enough space to just pick up Simeon without making significant cuts. But, man, I'd be making moves. I just did sort of try to reset at least my bullpen, as well as some of my offenses league. But, like, I just picked up a $1 Thomas Segese in this league. That is the guy I picked up in League One when I cut Simeon. Like, that was the, like, all right, I still need somebody who can play middle infield. This guy not only plays middle infield, but plays second and short. That seems good. Like, I think if I were you, I might have been tempted to go get him. And I was going to look at my watch list and see who else is available, but I have to make cuts in this league in order to get legal. So let's see. Oh, I know. Let's see. Like, Caleb Durbin is out there. Man, there's not a lot available in this league, huh? Let's see if we can find.
That is part of the problem. And it doesn't, the good thing is, it, like, I can manipulate my roster in a lot of different ways so that it doesn't necessarily have to be a second baseman. Like, I got Nico Horner at middle infield. He's got both second base and shortstop. The name that's kind of sticking out to me, and you know, this could be biased Red Sox fan, but Marcelo Meyer's just on fire. If anything happens to that infield, I think they're going to find a way to get him in there. I mean, he was intentionally walked with two outs the other night. So he has just been absolutely scorching the ball, where, like, it may get to a point where they have to find room for him, especially if Costas continues to hit the way he's going to hit. I mean, I don't know what they could possibly do with the infield, but they may have to find a way to get him in there. So there may be hope. Like, if that promotion did happen for one reason or another, then it makes the decision to cut Marcus Simeon so much easier. But, like, for now, where, and you brought this up at the top, like, I don't need the money right now. So, like, to me, I'd rather just see what I have in Simeon than get a Caleb Durbin, because for what it's worth, and I don't know how much it's worth at this point for a 34-year-old who showed signs of decline last season, but April, just like we just talked about with Sandy Alcantara, is easily his worst month for his career. Career 696 OPS in April, 93 WRC. Like, Marcus Simeon has had a really good career. His career WRC plus in April is 93, and it's by far the worst in any given month. So if he shows signs of turning it around, that's so much more exciting to me than kind of, at this point, basically just punting on the position, unless, you know, Dylan Moore really has become the reincarnation of Honus Wagner.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think one of the things I've thought about with Simeon is, if he does turn it around, that $23 version I cut in League One, there's a part of me that feels like, by cutting him now, if he does turn it around, by the time that turnaround starts to show up in any meaningful way or be trusted in any meaningful way, I might actually be able to get in on the bidding on getting him back. And I would have the money to do that, because he'd be much cheaper for me than anyone else, because I already have the cap penalty on him. I don't know that anyone's going to auction a $19 Simeon for a month. That's a good point. Right. And so part of me is thinking, like, if he does show any signs of a bounce back, by the time that actually is actionable, if someone starts an auction on him, or I start an auction on him and I can bid, I've already got a $12 cap penalty on him. So I've already got 12 of his dollars covered or saved, and it makes it easier for me to buy him back. But yeah, I mean, looking at this league, man, I mean, I picked up Segese and Tim Tawa. Tawa's been really good, but he's probably, I sort of am taking him a little bit of a bet that when Marte comes back, they're going to be like, Tawa's been too good, we've got to find somewhere to fit him in, and he's going to still continue to play. But I just don't know where that would be. That, like, there are no holes on that team. That team, like, that Arizona team is so good. Like, he's got, you know, from an eligibility standpoint, he's first, second, and outfield. I don't know where Tawa would play. I'm trying to pull up the Diamondbacks roster real quick, because, and maybe it's worth talking about Tawa for a minute before we look at that roster, but Tawa's been a guy who I have picked up in a couple of places. I wasn't really anticipating much from him. I'm never like a huge fan of these sort of late career breakouts. He's not that late. He just turned 26, so he's still in sort of a reasonable range. He was absolutely destroying, like he was making a mockery of AAA this year. Mm-hmm. It was only 26 plate appearances, but he had a 579 WOBA. Last year in AAA, he had a 417 WOBA in 157 plate appearances. He was good in AA last year. And since he's come up, he's walking a ton. He is he's only striking out 20.8% of the time, so no big concerns there. Tim Tawa's got a 90.3 average exit velocity. He was at 91.1 and then 91.9 the last 2 years in AAA. It's like it seems pretty legit. He's not a big high-end max EV guy. He's got a 109.7 as his max EV in MLB, and he never touched that in AAA, which is sort of interesting. 108.6 and 107.7 the last 2 years. The barrel rate is up in double digits. Like there's the performance has been legitimately good. He, a bit like we talked about with Noelvi Marte, he's got a 12.1% line drive rate. So like, yes, his home run per fly ball rate of 36.4% is going to come down. That's not sustainable. But his 207 BAPIP, which is based in part on that 12.1% line drive rate, is also not sustainable. And so, you know, he right now, he has four home runs and 53 plate appearances. That's like a, what is that like? And a 600 plate appearance. If you give it to a full 600 plate appearance season, that's like a 50 home run, 48 home run pace. He's not going to hit 40 home runs. I'll put that out there. But as the home run pace comes down, I think the rates will come up, and the rates are already good. I mean, the 233 batting average isn't great, but the 207 BAPIP explains that. And he's got a 358 on base, 558 slugging. I think he's showing me enough that I'm intrigued. But then you look at Arizona's lineup, and like right now he is their primary second baseman for the time being. But that's because of Ketel Marte, right? We know that that's not his job to keep. And then you start looking at the lineup and it's like, okay, well maybe he could play the outfield, but he's not going to displace Corbin Carroll. I think we can safely say that. You got Gurriel, Alec Thomas. Like maybe he could take some time from one of them. The next outfielders on this roster are like, you know, Garrett Hampson can play some outfield. They've got Randall Grichuk. Like there's room for him to pretty quickly become the fourth outfielder on this team. He's not going to displace Josh Naylor at first base. Pavin Smith has been their primary DH, I think, and has been killing the ball.
He's been great. Well, he's going a platoon guy, but he's been great.
Yeah. I'm going to assume, it might be a bad assumption, I'm going to assume Tawa could play third base if they needed him to, but, you know, Eugenio Suarez just hit four home runs yesterday, so he's got some runway still. I don't know. I think he probably sticks around. I think maybe the I don't know if it's like I would say the worst case scenario, but maybe the worst case scenario for him is that he ends up the small side of a platoon. It's like Alec Thomas and Pavin Smith are better off being platooned. And they're both lefties. He's a righty. Josh Naylor doesn't need to be platooned, but like anytime he needs a day off, you need to put a right. You're going to do that against a lefty and put a righty in the lineup. I sort of wish he were left-handed and you could be like, oh, just give him a lot of Gurriel's playing time or something like that.
Well, he's been brutal.
Yeah, and that'd be the one spot that maybe could open up. But the problem is because they're both righties, the only way that happens is if he actually displaces Gurriel. And I think that's going to happen.
I think one of the biggest problems for Tawa is potentially not even the current Major League roster, which sounds silly, but that Jordan Lawler is a 169 WRC plus at AAA and is he's hitting the crap out of the ball. He's doing everything they would want him to see. And I think just in terms of like line of succession, if they deem Lawler ready, it almost doesn't matter unless Tawa, it does even better than he's already currently doing, which is very good. Lawler is going to take a position. So like that might ultimately be Tawa's biggest spot, but to bring this like full circle, potential Semien replacements, at least in the short term, yeah, I'd be interested in Tawa, as I would with a lot of these second basemen who have seemed to be like saving people from the disasters of the Brandon Lau and the Marcus Semien and a couple of the other guys out there. Because second base has been like The top isn't great, but it's reasonably deep with names like this, which makes me feel a little bit better. Whereas if I had a shortstop disaster or a third base disaster, which feels weird compared to years past, we're like, oh, second base, yeah, it's so deep. But you're in a much better position to replace your second baseman at this point, I think, than your third baseman, your second baseman, or your third baseman, your shortstop, or even your first baseman.
Yeah. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to do a little lightning round of players that have been hurting our teams and what we're thinking about them. All right. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We've talked about a couple of teams that have been struggling and some players who could help, players who have hurt. Let's take a look now. And I just want to go through some names of guys that I was high on before the season. I felt good about and just have not been helping and make some decisions on what we do with them.
There's definitely one that if you don't have them on your list, I'm going to add them to the list at the end.
Well, you go first. You can go first. Throw a name out there.
Luis Robert has just completely ruined my life this month. He has been a train wreck, and like I benched him yesterday, and of course he homered, but he still struck out twice. It's like, he has just been so god awful, and some of it is bad luck. Yeah, a max EV of 115.8. That has to be in the top 20 in baseball. I'm sure the BABIP, if I look right now, yeah, the BABIP is at 196. He's a career 323 BABIP. Like, I get all that, but the strikeout rate is 33%. It's just it's such a bad lineup. It's a player who for 2 years now has just been atrocious. And like, I don't know, man, with how much he's striking out, like, is it a motivation thing? Because like when he was breaking out and the White Sox were not the laughing stock of MLB, like the strikeout rate was better. It wasn't great, but it was much better. And it seems like as the White Sox have gotten horrible, so has this player. And so they clearly want to trade him. He is not going to be in the White Sox at the end of the season. So like, could giving up on him now severely backfire? Because I still think in the doldrums of Luis Robert's soul, he is an elite potential player. He has posted one of the best fantasy seasons of a few years ago. So like, it's got to still be there. He's 27, but this is insufferable production.
Yeah. So here, if you want some signs of hope, dating back about last, I don't know, was this 8 games, something like that, last 10 days ish. Back to the beginning of the Boston series, right? So the Sox came, the White Sox went to Fenway, a week and a half ago, and then had Minnesota and Oakland. They've been a long road trip. Maybe just not being in Chicago has been good for him, but he has a 114 WRC plus since then. Now it's like 8 games, right? It's 36 plate appearances. He is still striking out 44.4% of the time.
It's ridiculous.
But he is walking 19.4% of the time over that stretch. And his plate discipline has gotten, I don't know, I would say it's improved because that's, you know, strikeout rate. It's hard to argue that. But like the swing strike rate is down a little bit and his chase rate is down 5%. His swing rate is actually down quite a bit. He has clearly intentionally been more patient because the zone rate on the season is 50.4%. It's 49.4 over that stretch. So this isn't just pitchers being like, ah, forget it. Why throw him strikes? No one else in this team can do anything. He has been more patient and it is partially leading to that increase in strikeouts, I think, because he's probably taking a lot more strikes. At least given the swing strike rate is down, that's the best explanation, right? If you swing less and you make fewer swinging strikes and you strike out a lot, it's gotta be more called strikes. But I think we're seeing some positive signs in the last 10-ish days. His exit velocity is way up over that stretch. He's at 2 of his 3 home runs. He's stolen a couple bases. It hasn't been great, but it's been better. And so that's I haven't been quite willing to give up on him yet.
Who would you prefer? Because this is a Chad classic player, this guy right here. Who would you prefer rest of season? Andy Páez has only struck out once in his last 4 games. He's had back-to-back 3-hit games. He's stolen a base. He's had 2 homers over his last 4 games. This is a player who, like, you know, has shown some signs. And I think the Dodgers are begging for him to take the center field role. Like, just like, please take it. I know Hyesung Kim has done well in the minors, so maybe he's the target there, or he goes to second and Tommy Edman goes to center. I don't know what the heck they're going to do. But I think they'd love to have Páez just take that role. He is batting ninth, though, in a much better lineup. And I think this does impact Luis Robert, because if Páez fails and Kim fails, they might trade for Luis Robert, which would save Robert's season potentially. So it's a very interesting comparison. But rest of season, am I crazy for thinking I might take Andy Páez over Luis Robert rest of season?
Not crazy, for sure. I mean, I think, like, you know, Páez still, like, a 29.1% hard hit rate. The exit velocities are not good. The xWOBA is 280. I don't think the playing time is even a little bit safe. Like, I get what you're saying about them begging him to take the center field job, but, like, they signed Kim to be their second baseman. Like, that's happening, I think. Like, I think Kim is going to be their second baseman before long, and that's going to push Edmund back to center field, and Páez is going to be the fourth outfielder. And that's just sort of the direction I think this is going.
So then tell me I'm crazy, because if that kind of player is comparable to Luis Robert, then I'm just going to go cut him everywhere.
No, well, the reason you're not crazy is because Páez started off poorly and has been better lately. And so if he's trending in the right direction, and if he outplays Kim, which is not so, like, that's the thing, is like, he could outplay Kim. That is certainly within the realm of possibility. And if he does, then he has a job. And if he has a job and he keeps hitting, then I, like, it's, to me, crazy would be like, I just don't see what path exists for this to happen. The path is pretty clear. Like, there's a very clear path where Páez outperforms Robert the rest of the season.
Oh my God.
I just don't think it's the bet I would make. Let's talk about a different guy who I really thought was going to have I was going to say a bounce back year, but his year last year was good. It just wasn't as great as it had been. But Zach Gallen has been awful. The strikeout rate is, you know, his strikeout rate trended down last year from, it had been, you know, 26.9 and 26.0 in 23, and then was down to 25.1 last year. It's down to 24.5 this year. So continuing to trend down. That is also a continuation of a fastball velocity trend. 94.1, 93.6, and then 93.7 the last 3 years, then down to 93 this year. The walk rate was 5.6 in 23, was up to 8.7 in 24, is now 10.5 so far this year. The ground ball rate, which has always been, you know, comfortably above 40%, is at 30.4%. And so that plus an increase in home run per fly ball rate, which has not been big, 11.1% home run per fly ball rate, not concerning, but a lot more fly balls, a slight increase in home run per fly ball rate, 1.3 home run per nine. And he's got a 5.57 ERA. And, you know, the FIP, XFIP, Sierra, like, all that stuff looks better. And so you can be like, oh, yeah, no, it's going to improve. And it is. It's going to improve. He has pitched better than that ERA suggests. Those ERA indicators are still all over four. This is a guy who you were, you know, I wasn't expecting the 2022 sub-3 ERA Zach Gallen to come back, but like mid-3s ERA, right? That seemed like a pretty much a lock. Like, he had a 3.38 FIP last year, 3.65 ERA. Like, something between those two numbers seemed really probable. I don't know. I don't know what's up. It looks ugly. Should I be done with Zach Gallen?
There's two things, I guess, that if I drafted him highly, that, like, I'm kind of holding on to. And you did bring up how, like, there should be some positive or some good regression, right? Where, like, all of the underlying ERA estimators kind of suggest, or the ERA estimators suggest, that he hasn't been quite this bad, although they suggest he's still been bad. And I guess the other thing would be, and this isn't going to make people really feel better, but the quality of opponent has been really hard for Zach Gallen. He has faced the Cubs, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Brewers, the Cubs again, and the Braves. And I know a few of those offenses are off to a little bit of slow starts, but those are offenses where, like, on any given night, they could hang eight on you. You know, like, those are good teams that he's faced. At the same time, there is nothing else that makes me feel better about Zach Gallen. The walks are out of control. The velocity's down, like you said. The barrel rate against would be a great barrel rate for a hitter. So that's not really what you want to see out of a pitcher. He's at 11% barrel rate. So he's not fooling anybody. And this was a guy who, you know, like you said, was coming off of a season, was already kind of a down season. And so he wasn't drafted expecting, like you said, to be like an ace again. But I, at this point, I he's either a cut or you keep him. Like, he's a classic keeper cut because nobody's trading for him, right? Like you can't.
That's solid advice that you'd only get right here on the Keeper Cut podcast.
What I mean is like
that he's either a keep or a cut, or you keep him.
Yeah,
that's it.
I just don't think he's a sell low because like what the hell would you get for Zach Allen? Like Tim Tawa? Yeah. Like I don't know if you can get anything for Zach Allen. So like you've really just got to make a call. Am I just going to send this guy to free agency and risk that someone else picks him up and performs well? Or am I just going to let him fester on my roster? And I think for all the teams out there, what matters is what does the rest of your rotation look like? Because I don't think you can start him at this point. He's been that bad. If I could stomach it and continue to roster him, just like Marcus Semien, as bad as it's been, I'm going to hope that a player this good historically begins to turn it around. But man, this is tough. This one's been bad.
Yeah. No, and I think like the thing that's been so difficult as someone who rosters him is, okay, his first start of the season, the Cubs, he struggled. Fine. That happens, right? It was his first start. He comes out in his second start, 6 2/3 shutout innings of three hit, 13 strikeout, 0 walks against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. And so I suspect there were a decent number of people who were like, I'm not messing with him at Yankee Stadium. Like, it wasn't a great first start. Let's let him. And then he just dominates the Yankees. And then he gives up two strikeouts, 4 walks and 4 2/3, 5 runs and 7 hits to Baltimore. And it's like, yeah, Baltimore's a good offense, or at least we thought they were. They haven't been, but we thought at that point they were. And it's just been like, there's been reason to just sort of like go step by step with him and be like, no, it's, you know, first bad start. Oh, he's great. Yeah, the Orioles got to him. The Orioles are going to get to teams. Okay, he was only okay against Milwaukee. Yeah, the Cubs got to him again, but by now we know the Cubs are a good offense. And then he gets hit by Atlanta, and it's like, yeah, like you can keep making excuses, and I think the things you said are all true, but man, at what point is he just going to like make a good start? And you're talking about like, oh, well, he's faced all these good offenses. He's in the NL West. He hasn't faced the Padres or Dodgers yet. He hasn't pitched at Coors yet. Right. Yeah. That's all coming. That's like half his remaining season is those scenarios. So like, I don't know.
And even that Yankee, we have since learned that like the Yankees lineup outside of Aaron Judge isn't as good as it looked against Milwaukee. Let me just kind of put it that way. So like that one is like, all right, we'll take it. Obviously, it's one of the best starts this year, period. But
right.
I don't know. I'm out on it.
I don't think I can cut him yet, but I think I'm going to put him on trade blocks. I don't think I'm going to shop him hard. I think you're right. I think like he's not the kind of guy you can shop hard, because if you call someone and you're like, hey, you're looking for pitching, what do you think about Zach Gallen? They're going to be like, he's been terrible. Like, what do you mean?
What I think about pitching worse. Yeah.
But I think you put him on the block, and what you're actually hoping for is for someone to reach out, someone to see him on the block and think he's a buy low. And, you know, Chad put him on his block. He obviously thinks he's toast. So I'm going to reach out to Chad and try to lowball him on Zach Gallen. And you take that lowball offer, you try to negotiate it up, and you decide if you can get something that's better than a cut. And at that point, like, it's one of those things to keep in mind, and especially in auto new leagues, but it's true in any league where there's like salary relief or anything from cutting a player. Auto new is the most obvious in this. But if you have like a $20 Zach Gallen, if somebody's offering you some like B prospect you don't really want in a trade, cutting him, getting an immediate $10 in cap space, and then getting $10 more when that other manager picks him up, because they probably will, is that could be better than a random B prospect. So that's what you're looking for. Is like, you think, you know, in a negotiation, you needed your reserve price. Like, what's my alternative, and what's the minimum price I'm willing to take? For a guy like Gallen, it's like, how much is the 15, 20, whatever it is, dollars cap space you're going to get? How much is that worth to you? If someone offers you something better than that, take it. And they might. So I think it's worth putting him on a trade block, but I think you're right. You can't start calling people up and being like, hey, want to lightly use Zach Gallen? Cause they don't, they probably don't. All right. Our lightning round lasted 2 players, but we're about out of time here. So we got a jet. We're not very good at
lightning
rounds. They
were 2 big ones. We had to talk about those guys. If we're going to talk about this.
For sure. But thank you all for listening. We will be back with you next week.